I want to dedicate tonight's shir l'zeich nishmas Yitzchak Meir ben Gershon, the father of Noah Mishkov, whose first yahrzeit is today, and the neshama shel Avin Aliyah from the Zichus for Learning, who used to come to the shir on Thursday nights very often, and added a lot to the oilam here, and to always had very fascinating insights and questions. And was really a spectacular person who raised an amazing family, and neshama shel Aliyah, and shel nachas ruach from the learning that we do together tonight. Okay, so three shilas as per our usual. I'll go in order of chronologically when I got the shilas. I got a text about a half hour before the beginning of the Super Bowl. How do I know? Because I always look forward to the Super Bowl every year. It's my favorite 4 hours. No one texts me during the Super Bowl, no one emails me during the Super Bowl. I get 4 hours where I just could, you know, write or whatever. I was supposed to write an article for my Shul's Torah journal. I knocked them both out during the Super Bowl, an English article, Hebrew article, fantastic. So someone texts me right before the Super Bowl, right before your Super Bowl break, before you get, you know, before you get your annual break. Here was the shaila. Are you allowed to say that Tom Brady is awesome? Said I, the Gemara says you're not allowed to say kamenah, how beautiful an Ovid Chavim is, but maybe it's only about physical beauty. But can you say that he's awesome? So that was a big shaila right before the Super Bowl, and he had taco a good game. So it's probably a big Yetzer Hara heart to say that he was awesome many times. What? There's Tam Elachim. Okay, so that was a shaila about Tom Brady. Okay, so that was a shaila. Shaila number two came. Last. Oh yeah, the 10-minute hello. So shaila number two came a little while last Thursday night. I got a phone call from the guy who produced, or an email from the guy who produces the Headlines podcast with David Lichtenstein, asking, "Would you be willing to do an interview tomorrow morning on the $1,000 sandwich that Doma is selling?" And I said yes, which normally I wouldn't say yes to talk about things like this, but there was a particular reason why I wanted to say yes. And I could sort of predict what his questions would be, except for the first question that he asked. He started out by saying, on Friday morning when he called me, he started out by saying, there is a halacha called the Zolo Vesove, that's how we describe Ben Soru Mora. And the Rambam counts in the Sefer Mitzvos that a lo sase to be a zol v'sove, that you're not allowed to be gluttonous, and you're not allowed to eat like this, you know, to make eating such a, you know, such an adventure, such a matzv. So, considering that it's usser, if you order the $1,000 sandwich from Doma, do you say a bracha? Because you don't say a bracha when you eat something usser. So I thought the question was like, I couldn't tell if he was serious, so I didn't really answer it. I just said, yeah, I wasn't expecting that question, but of course you say it, bracha. You know, like, I just like, you know, sort of like next question kind of thing. But then I realized that I never answered the question. so maybe we'll, so that's a question to think about, and maybe just some more perspective on that whole situation. Then a third question I got an email 2 days ago. Good morning, Rabbi Leibowitz, blah, blah, blah. To preface my question, I personally have zero interest in anything to do with Valentine's Day. I grew up with the understanding that it's not something an observant Jew associates with or celebrates. That said, I do occasionally find myself in situations, particularly in the workplace environment, where a secretary or assistant, for example, may expect some chocolate or flowers on such a day and see it as an affront not to do so. In speaking with some of my non-Jewish colleagues, it seems that such gestures are obviously not considered romantic in nature, but considered a kind gesture, maybe similar to giving all the mothers in your office a flower on Mother's Day or prior to Mother's Day. Additionally, I'm surprised to see some kosher candy stores and kosher restaurants advertising Valentine's Day gifts and dinner specials. It seems odd to me. I'm not sure if this is strictly a shkafik or a halacha question, or maybe a little bit of both or neither. Curious to hear your thoughts on the subject. Thank you for taking time to read this. Okay, so we have Tom Brady is awesome. We have the bracha on the $1,000 sandwich, whether you say bracha on the $1,000 sandwich, and we have, can you give a Valentine's Day gift to your secretary?
Three.
All three. You always say all three. Okay, so we'll start with Valentine's Day, and then you'll have to vote for the next one when we finish that.
It's been serious.
What?
It's a crazy mitzvah.
Okay, so in order to answer these kinds of questions, the first thing you have to do, what's the first thing you have to do in order to answer this kind of question? You have to know what Valentine's Day is. Like, what is it, right? Yeah. Meaning, I know how it's advertised. I know that I can go to Dunkin' Donuts, get a heart-shaped donut that with pink icing, and just like on Halloween, I can get an orange, you know, sprinkled donut, and, you know, other holidays, I can get a green and red sprinkled. I know all that, but, like, what is it really? What is this holiday? Why is it a holiday? So if you go online, you can find the following very clear and simple description of the history of Valentine's Day. It goes as follows. From February 13th to the 15th, the Romans celebrated the feast of, I could be getting this wrong, Lupercalia or something like that, Lupercalia. The men sacrificed a goat and a dog, then whipped women with the hides of the animals they had just slain. The Roman romantics were drunk, they were naked, said a historian at the University of Colorado at Boulder. Young women would actually line up for the men to hit them. They believed this would make them fertile. V'chule, v'chule. This is how the Romans did it. Later on, one of the popes muddled things in the 5th century. Oh, no. The ancient Romans may also be responsible for the name of our modern day of love. Emperor Claudius II executed two men, both named Valentine, on February 14th of different years in the 3rd century AD. Their martyrdom was honored by the Catholic Church with the celebration of St. Valentine's Day. So later, a different pope muddled things in the 5th century by combining St. Valentine's Day with Lupercalia to expel the pagan rituals. Meaning the early Christians had a real problem with a lot of the pagan rituals because it was a big draw for a lot of their clientele, for a lot of their chevra. So they needed to sort of absorb the pagan holidays and Christianize them, you know, so they can, you know, they can slowly rid themselves of the pagan rituals. So this is what they did. They took this holiday, they absorbed it, they called it St. Valentine's Day after these two fellows, Valentine, who were executed on that day. And they stopped with the killing of the goat and the dog and the whipping of the women, and instead made it a holiday of love. And then as the years went by, the holiday became much sweeter. Shakespeare romanticized it in his works, and it gained popularity through Britain and the rest of Europe, and paper cards began being made, and Hallmark, v'chule, v'chule, and today it is an $18.6 billion industry to sell Valentine's Day products. So that's what happens. It has become completely commercialized, and the article concludes, and so this is from NPR, by the way. And so the celebration of Valentine's Day goes on in varied ways. Many will break the bank buying jewelry and flowers for their beloveds. Others will celebrate in a SAD, that is SAD, Single Awareness Day, way, dining alone and binging on self-gifted chocolates. That is indeed sad. A few may even be spending this day the same way the early Romans did, but let's not go there. Okay, I don't know what that means. Okay, so this is the history. Now, why is it important to know the history? Because what's the halachic issue of celebrating in any way or participating in any way in such a day? So you need to know, does it have a basis at all in Avodah Zarah? So, you know, sometimes it's helpful in dealing with an issue la'alacha to think of what a close parallel is. Meaning, is there another day that maybe... You're not going to find tshuvas about Valentine's Day, because I don't think this was ever a thing. Meaning, when I was growing up, at least, Jews would never participate in any which way. Orthodox Jews didn't participate in any which way in Valentine's Day. And it wasn't a thing to buy something for your secretary unless she was your Valentine. You know, like, there was your Valentine, I think. That's at least the way it was depicted on television shows when I was growing up. That if you had a Valentine, you didn't. It was like having a prom date. You had one or you didn't, but you didn't get to have everybody as your Valentine. Right? It's not like... And Mother's Day, by the way, also used to be for your mother. You know, it wasn't like for every mother either. But now it's for anyone who is a mother. And it used to be when you won the Little League World Series, you got a trophy. And if you lost, you didn't. Now, I think it's all part of the same thing that everybody has to get. Everybody has to. So the idea, you're not going to find tshuvas in the poskim, but you will find tshuvas on other days. So, like, what else would be similar to Valentine's Day that we can use as a dimyon?
Christmas.
St. Patrick's Day, yeah, probably not either.
Holiday gifts.
So holiday gifts on the right, in certainly in the December season. What?
So New Year's, that also.
New Year's, same season, right? Similar.
Halloween.
Halloween.
Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving is not a religious holiday. Okay. So let's start with it. Let's start with Thanksgiving, because there are poskim that are machmir about Thanksgiving too. Rav Hutner famously held that any time you're celebrating a date on the secular calendar, can't do it. No participation whatsoever. To the extent that Rav Hutner was of the opinion that you can't even do things differently on Sunday than you do the rest. Meaning, if your shul has, let's say my shul has a 6:55 minyan the whole week, and Sunday there's an 8:30 minyan. Nope, can't do that, because you're acknowledging that Sunday is different than other days. Shabbos, you can have whenever, obviously within Zman Kriya Shema, but you can have a different time minyan. But Sunday, you can't do it, because that's the. How could you acknowledge that Sunday is a different day? But nobody's going to work, and practically, and carpools, and everything else. Still, that Rav Hutner held absolutely not, no celebration in Thanksgiving whatsoever. Okay, that's a different. That's the halacha. That's not celebrating a.
It's acknowledging there's a different calendar.
No, of course we acknowledge that there is a solar year, right? And there is such a thing as an equinox and a solstice, and Rav Moshe held. It was Rav Moshe had several tshuvas about Thanksgiving, three, four, five, like a lot of tshuvas about Thanksgiving, and some of them were associated each other. Till he had to clarify in later tshuvas. That's why he had so many tshuvas, because it was like yes, no, maybe, what? And then he had to sort of explain. So Moshe in volume 8 of Igros Moshe held that you can have turkey on Thanksgiving and you can celebrate Thanksgiving. Don't make a ritual out of having turkey on Thanksgiving. It shouldn't be something that you insist on doing every year, because it's Bal Tosef. You're adding a new holiday into the year, not because it has any avodah. There's no avodah zarah. There's nothing. It comes from purely secular sources. Rav Moshe was aware that it came from purely secular. Secular in a positive way now, meaning non-avodah zarah sources. And he said, of course, you would take pride in it's natural of any country to celebrate their origins and to celebrate the founding of the country, just like Hamadas Melech. They would have a celebration. So that's a natural thing. But to add it to have a celebration, he said, for sure. But to add it every year as a celebration on the calendar, that's Shaila Bal Tosef already. And Rav Moshe said, so you can't make it like a Chok V'lo Yavr, that every year you're gonna have turkey. Rav Soloveitchik famously had every year had a turkey dinner. He would give shir early on Thanksgiving so that he could catch a plane back to Boston so that he can have his Thanksgiving dinner with his family. Of course, there's the famous Thanksgiving shir that Rav Soloveitchik gave in YU one year when he was giving shir early, and he was stuck on a certain sugya, and he kept on going and going, and people kept on coming in and saying, Rav, they're ready to take you to the airport. Nay, not ready yet, not ready yet. And they kept on coming in, and hours and hours and hours went by, and people were, out of it, and there was. And finally, he says, "Okay, three guys, we just have to make a beis din. I need to be matir neder." Apparently, he had said earlier that day, or earlier that week, that we're going to finish this sugya this week, or this perek this week. And he felt that was a din of a neder, and that's why he held everyone to saying the shir for 4, 5, 6 hours, and he realized it wasn't going to happen, so he's matir neder, so he can get back on the plane. So, Torah still came first, but he didn't have a problem with observing Thanksgiving. Now, Valentine's Day is very different than Thanksgiving, because Valentine's Day has very clear both pagan and Christian origins. It's a combination of pagan and Christian holiday, like many of the holidays are, whereas Thanksgiving is totally secular. But what they have in common is that both holidays are celebrated in ways that make sense, that are rational, and that are not overtly religious ways of celebrating. Meaning, how does one celebrate Valentine's Day? One gives gifts to their beloved. That is a normal thing to do. When you love somebody, you give gifts to them. We encourage doing that. You should always do that. God willing, when you're married, you're going to hopefully want to give gifts. It doesn't have to be big gifts. It could be a little box of chocolates. You're going to want to give gifts to your wife, and that's a completely appropriate thing to do. To celebrate with a su'uda, we celebrate everything with su'uda, like, so you do that in Thanksgiving. These are both ways of celebrating that make a lot of sense. But the parallel is not right, because Thanksgiving is secular, Valentine's Day is not. Halloween is a little bit closer, because Halloween clearly has pagan origins also, and therefore you're probably not allowed to participate in Halloween celebrations, at least in a clear way, like by dressing up and by doing all these things. We've discussed in the past that giving candy to trick-or-treaters is apparently not a problem, but that may have a lot to do with Eva and with the whole fear of the trick, and with the little neighborhood kids are going to know that every house gives them candy except for the frum houses. That's not going to be so good. So you're allowed to give candies to the trick-or-treaters. When I was an assistant rabbi in Shari Tefillah, so I used to give a morning Gemara shir, and there was a guy that attended the shir, that learned in the kollel there in the morning, who told me that when he got engaged, he brought his kala to meet Rav Pam Zichrono Livracha, and it happened to have been Halloween night, and Rav Pam wouldn't interrupt their conversation for anything. The phone was ringing, he didn't care. There's someone here in front of me now, I'm talking to whoever's in front of me, and he wouldn't answer the phone, because he prioritized who was with him, except when trick-or-treaters knocked at the door. He would stop and go give candy to the trick-or-treaters. So Mustamba's mother, that was, later on that became a famous story. Now, like every year on Halloween, like on Yeshiva World News, they post that story about Rav Pam. But this isn't a good mashal either, because while they have similar origins, meaning both Halloween and Valentine's Day are based in pagan and avodah zarah rituals, the way that they're celebrated is totally different. The way that people celebrate Halloween makes no sense. It's davar shein bo tam, and it goes back to the whole costume thing. Probably goes back to a lot of that stuff, to a lot of the pagan origins. And you read about it; it does apparently. Whereas the way you celebrate Valentine's Day has nothing to do with the pagan or Christian origins. It has more to do with Shakespeare than it has to do with either of those things. It's just, and it's a very normal, natural thing to do, to give gifts to someone that you like very much. So it's not an exact parallel either. What I thought it's most similar to, and this may sound strange, is yoga. What? Why is it more similar to yoga? So there's an interesting shiloh that I've never gotten any posting to really answer me straight. Are you allowed to do yoga? Right, an exercise that involves balance and stretching and but it was also started as a all these moves are sun salutations and things like this, and amming and all these things.
Yes,
right, all was for avodah zarah. It has avodah zarah origins, but people do it for a good reason. They want to stay in good shape, and as you get older, balance is very important. And people swear by it, and the flexibility, and all and muscle tone. I don't know all these things, and it's apparently very good for you, and it helps you breathe and focus. And now they did it for avodah zarah, so that they could, because apparently, like if you're balancing yourself on like your pinky knuckle or something, and you're balancing all your weight on that, that takes incredible concentration. So in order to truly meditate and focus on the avodah zarah, this helped them a great deal. So all of the moves are named after avodah zarah. The things that people say when they do it are things that are done for avodah zarah. But there's a very good reason to do yoga. Meaning it makes a lot of sense that someone would want to do it, because it's a very healthy thing to do. So in that sense, it seems that Valentine's Day is similar. It has origins that are clearly very, very questionable, but there's a very good reason to want to buy something, a nice gift for someone that you would like. But Valentine's Day is much worse than yoga. Why is it much worse? Because there's a very good reason to buy gifts for people, for someone you love. There's a very good reason to buy a gift for your wife. But dafka on February 14th, I mean, yoga is something that's an ongoing practice, something that you do all the time to stay in shape. So there's a good reason to do whenever. It's not a celebration of a holiday. It's just an activity that a person does. Yeah?
Maybe you would say yoga is worse. Because yoga is the same thing before.
It's the same thing they do. So in that sense, yoga is worse because you're doing the same things that they did, as opposed to Valentine's Day doing something totally different that has nothing to do with what they did. But it's interesting, if you know, a ha'ara that I discovered when I was researching yoga, which I think is a very important ha'ara in Chukas Akum. You know, it's yadua that the Ramah in Yerodea Kufa in Ches quotes the Marik's Shita on what's the definition of Chukas Akum. And the Marik says, Be'echad mishnei panim. There are two ways that you could tell something's a violation of Chukas Akum. And it should be noted, the Marik is not the only Shita out there. There are other Shitas in Rishonim. The Gra has a different Shita. But the Marik is the one that's quoted by the Ramah. And the Marik is the most widely accepted Shita, I think, in terms of how we define Chukas Akum, Chukas Hagayim. So Marik says, Echad Mishnei Panim. Ha'echad hu adavar she'in ta'amo nigla. Something that we don't know the reason for it. The kibun shuos a davar mishuna she'in bo tam nigla. If you're doing something strange that no one could figure out, that you don't know the reason that you're doing it, el she'im no'agin kein, it's just something that people do, that goyim seem to do, as niravade she'nim shachachrei modulan. It seems like you want to be a guy. You're doing it because the goyim do it? If you're doing something that makes sense, so then no one's going to start thinking, oh, is he doing this because he wants to be like a guy? But if you're doing something that makes no sense, makes no logical sense, then the only logical explanation of why you're doing it is because you want to be like a guy. That's B'chuk Seyed Lo Selechu. That's the Marik. And then the Marik says, and the other way you could violate B'chuk Seyed Lo Selechu is anything that involves pritzus. Any minhag that involves, even if there is a reason to do it, but it's a pritzus stick of things, so that would be B'chuk Seyed Lo Selechu. Now, If you base yourself on the Marik, yoga l'charu would be permissible, right? Because no one's going to look at the person doing yoga and say, it makes no sense that a person would do that. No one's going to look at a person buying gifts for Valentine's Day and say, it makes no sense that a person would do that. Well, no, I mean, if that's the thing, to show appreciation to any woman in your life, so then no one's going to say it makes no sense. It makes plenty of sense. And the logical conclusion is not going to be, he must be nimshach achar gayim. But what's fascinating is, when the Ramah quotes that Marik, the Ramah quotes the first half of the sentence, he quotes the Pritzus thing, but he changes the explanation of the first category. The Marik said, you can't do something that's Ein Bo Tam, that has no explanation. Why? Because everyone is then going to think that you are just Nimshach Achareyam. It's not what the Ramah says. The Ramah says, you can't do something that's Ein Bo Tam, because if you don't know the reason, chances are it started with an Avodah Zarah. That's what the Ramah says. Chances are it started with an Avodah Zarah. And if that's the case, you can't be doing that. So according to the Ramah, it would turn out, yoga's out, and Valentine's Day is out. Because anything that started with an Avodah Zarah is out. You're not allowed to do. So I thought that I discovered America when I came across this difference between the Marik and the Ramah. And then I found Ramosha, of course, noticed it as well. And Ramosha in his tshuva, he has an opposite nafkamina. He talks about something, he talks about wearing Western-style clothing. Right? Are you allowed to wear whatever's in fashion? I go like this, as if anything I'm wearing is in fashion, but it's not. But it probably was 10 years ago. But the you know, Western style clothing. So are you allowed to wear Western style clothing? Because after all, it's you know, there's no logical reason why is it that people think I'm wearing this tie for Chodesh Adar and not because it's just Tam tie that I pulled out of my closet. Well, what's wrong with it? Why is it any different than ties that are actually in fashion, right? What's the difference? It's just what Goyim tell you. It's whatever Paris tells you is in style. So that's what's in style. No. So are you allowed to wear Western style clothing? So Maisha says, when it's something that you know for sure, he points out this machlokas, Marik, and the Ramah. So according to the Ramah, the whole concern is that it probably comes from Avodah Zarah. Ramesh says, but if you know it doesn't come from Avodah Zarah, then there's nothing to be concerned about. Whereas by the Marik, if there's no logic and you're only doing it because you're going to be like them, so then Nimshach Achareya, maybe there would be a concern. So Maish ultimately is Meikel, because he says anyway it's not a Shaila, because it's not like this is Goyisha clothing. It's clothing that they make for whatever customers, you know, whoever the customers are. They're happy to sell it to Jews and to non-Jews and to, you know, people of all stripes and colors and religions and whatever. That's perfectly fine. So it's not even Goyisha clothing. So that's why Ramosha didn't think that was a problem at all. But he does notice that difference between the Ramah and the Marik and uses that as a nafkamina. Now, given that, you know, this is, by the way, one of the I initially thought caps and gowns were in this category. right? Caps and gowns at graduation. Why? Because it's clearly, you do the research, clearly was worn by Christian clergy, right? And that's what it was. It was based on the clothing that was worn either by monks or priests or whatever. And because all the original universities were religious universities, and that's just quite odd. So people wear caps and gowns. So I think the Maisa goes that when Rabbi Meiselman was, I don't know if he was a faculty member at MIT or he was graduating MIT, but he was on the stage there and he was wearing his cap and gown. So the story goes that he was thinking in the middle of the graduation of the origins of the cap and gown, and he came to the maskana in the middle of the graduation that it was... that was Chukas HaGoyim, and he took it off right there on the stage. He took off the cap and gown. But I don't know. So, but Rav Shechter told me that he doesn't think at all that's at all true. He thinks it's not Chukas HaGoyim at all. Why? So he said because, yeah, it's true that the clergy used to wear it, but it wasn't that they wore it because the religion demands that they wear it, because there was any religious significance to wearing it. They wore it because you're supposed to be able to identify the chashuvim in any crowd. So how do you identify the chashuvim? Like you go to a hospital, the Rama says, how do you identify the doctors? They're the guys in the white coats. So wearing a white coat is not chukas hagayim, it's just to identify who the chashuvah ones are. So that's what the caps and gowns are. They're to identify the chashuvim. They weren't part of the Avodah Zarah ritual. Right, so Rav Shechter thought the same is true when it comes to graduates. Yeah,
I want to say it's then priesthood, but at the same time, like
so that's good. To my next point. Or almost my next point. You know, it's certainly not usher to eat chocolate or to buy flowers, you know, just because that's the way they celebrate a holiday. I mean, like, certainly the rest of the year you're allowed to buy chocolate. You know, the move is to buy chocolate the day after Valentine's Day, right, because it's on sale. No? I'll eat all the red and green chocolate on, whatever, December 26th that Godiva is willing to sell me for whatever. You know, that's what people do. But Rav Moshe in Yerodeich El Dal Tzimunir Alf Oz Gimel discusses whether sitting Begilei Arosh is a violation of B'chuk HaSeim Lo Selechu. Because that's what the Goyim used to do, to sit Begilei Arosh. So Rav Moshe says, it's not B'chuk HaSeim Lo Selechu. Because it's very logical why people want to sit Begilei Arosh. It's more comfortable to sit Begilei Arosh than it is B'kisei Arosh. He says it's like if you if there was a holiday of the Chavim where they ate chicken on the holiday, let's say. So it wouldn't be usher to eat chicken. The whole world eats chicken, religious people, not religious people, everyone eats chicken because it's delicious. So if there's a practice that the whole world does, that's, you know, that everybody does, and that has nothing to do with being a religious person, so people eat chocolate. We're not going to ask for eating chocolate. The question is, should we ask for giving chocolate on February 14th? Meaning, it's hard to say that it's usher to give chocolate on February 14th, but to give it dafka in a heart-shaped red box, you know, to give it dafka, you know, with the Valentine's Day theme. Now, it's true, the day has been secularized a lot. It's no longer Saint Valentine's Day, it's just Valentine's Day. And you have Christians and Muslims and Hindus and Jews and whatever, you know, will you be my Valentine kind of thing, you know, regardless of any religious affiliation. But I thought that whatever arguments you want to make, you have to remember the Ma'arik and the Ran and the Rama forbid anything that's Mishum Pritzus. And when he is Daiti, at least the way I remember growing up on television, you know, again, that's my whole education because I'm not really out there in secular society, but is that it seems that Valentine's Day is a day that lends itself to a reasonable amount of pritzus, meaning if there's ever something that's yesh b'mishum pritzus, you know, Chazal say that even wearing a red garment is pritzus. The whole day is red, right? There's a reason. The whole day is the theme of the day is red. Everything is pritzus in the whole day. So I think participating, and to me, it's extremely alarming that it became a thing that people give their secretaries. You know, Rabbi Rudinsky from Muncie says he's ushered secretaries. Now that I'm a secretary. So I think what he means is, he says, you know, you work in a big office or something. You work just you in an office and a secretary. Absolutely awesome. You get too close. You know, the amount of unhealthy relationships that happen between bosses and secretaries, and that you're gonna take that risk and increase the chances of these kinds of problems. So it would seem that any overt acknowledgement of Valentine's Day would, in my humble opinion, would be yesh b'mishum pritzus. So we could argue all we want, like a hin and a hair, about whether it's based on avodah zarah and chukas hagayim from that perspective. It's chukas hagayim from a different perspective. It's a pritzus tika holiday, and mainly any participation in a pritzus tika holiday is chukas hagayim for that reason. So I would think, you know, I said, where was it? Was it maybe it was in DRS? I mentioned the shayla. And when I said, what's the origins of Valentine's Day? And one of the kids said, didn't Christians used to kill Jews on Valentine's Day? I said, that's every Christian holiday. It used to be they go kill Jews. But they no longer, thank God, kill Jews on most of the Christian holidays. But still, I'd say it's at least the Davar Sheyesh Bo Mishum Pritzus. What do you do, though, if everyone in the office is giving their secretary something? Huh? So the problem of Eva and this and that, you know, with your that you're going to be the only boss that didn't get the secretary some chocolate or something. So I would think that the day before, the day after, get a plain box of chocolate that's not shaped red, you know, like a heart or whatever. I don't know what they give on Valentine's Day. Yes, stop appreciation. And, you know, if you appreciate her the week before, you appreciate her the week after, you're not going to have to appreciate her on Valentine's Day.
Would, like, having it supposed to be giving
yourself
more.
I don't think so. I don't think that would help so much. It seems to me to be very not right, the whole participation in the.
Would it be better to give her something that's not like chocolate or flowers, like get rid of like any like sense of like romance?
I would think so. Not without any sense of romance.
Right, I mean, get rid of like all the factors that can be interpreted.
Yeah, you have to judge the situation, but right, Amazon gift card, something like that. It's not lo sechanim. You have a relationship with her. It's just to bridge it with the other shayla. Yeah.
Is there a problem with pizza stuff like yoga?
So yoga, I don't, if it's a co-ed class, but otherwise I don't think so. Meaning it's exercise like any other exercise.
Yeah,
so we're not going to ask for exercise just because in co-ed gyms, you know, it's pretzels. You know.
I did point out an interesting point that all the names are all origins are.
In yoga, you're saying.
Yeah. So should not refer.
You definitely should not. I mean. I couldn't get post given that I asked to Asr Yoga as much as I tried, because I really thought it was Asr. Like, but you definitely should not be doing. I think Rabbi Mann from Eretz Chemda, who's a big Talmud of Rabbi Willard, the big Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael. I think he or one of the other Rabbanim in Eretz Chemda wrote an article about yoga, and he said at least you need to be very careful not to do all the amming and the. You know, all these sounds and the different and you should probably call the moves different things also, right? You probably, you know, namaste and all that stuff. You should probably call it different things also.
Well, I'm just, will the same thing apply like meditation? Like science has shown that there are like a lot of benefits to it.
Meditation? We believe in meditation. Judaism believes in meditation.
Really?
Yeah. You just got to do it the right way. But Jewish meditation.
Yeah.
Oh, so you got to read Ari Kaplan's book. I think Rav Moshe Weinberg is very into it. Also, he's also very into yoga, by the way. He thinks yoga is gewaldig. I've never seen him do yoga, I don't know, but I'm told that I heard him say it. I heard him say that he thinks yoga is gewaldig, and he said he does it. He said it like it was life changing when he started doing yoga. People who do it say it's life changing, and the people who don't do it and have tried it, you know, will say it almost ended their lives. I tried it once, I landed on my head before I studied the subject. I didn't even know that there was any issue. So it was like, okay, now you put your hands on the floor, your knees behind your elbows, and he's like, boom, I landed on my head, and I was like, that could have been the end of me. So that was it. I wasn't doing yoga. I'll just run on the treadmill, thank you very much, and that'll be just fine for me. So what about all these stores that give that have these? Someone sent me on Halloween a picture of a display from one of our local stores under the Vada Vaitan Sashkacha candy store with a huge Halloween display, you know, for people who want to buy Halloween candy. To me, that was very off-putting, at the very least. You know, you ask the questions, like David Lichtenstein asked me, can the Vod give out Ashkacha on a $1,000 sandwich? Can the Vod give out Ashkacha on Halloween candy, and on Valentine's Day candy, or whatever? It's, I don't like it at all. I don't think we should allow it, but it's always very, very tricky to decide what non-kashrus related issues we're gonna stick our head into. There are certain non-kashrus related issues that we do. If a store is open on Shabbos, we're not going to give Ashkacha to it.
That has to do with also,
not necessarily, meaning we can control it, and it's in the neighborhood, so people can walk in, and they can see, and they, you know, I'm not talking about like there are vegan restaurants in the city that are open on Shabbos, and the Rav HaMachshir says, we're very machmir not to ever walk in on Shabbos, because it's going to be Maris HaAyin. Yeah, so they could do Kol HaYosher Beinav on Shabbos and whatever, that, you know, who knows what's going on there on Shabbos. Not talking about that. You can see what's going on in a place, but that's a red line. The OU doesn't give Ashkacha to restaurants in Vegas, in Las Vegas, because they don't want to encourage it. There are certain things that they, you know, that people will that Ashkachas, certainly, you know, those seedy places near the airport for business travelers. Maybe Yavin, I'm not going to get into any more detail. We would never give Ashkacha to, you know, to one of these places. But the food might be kosher. You know, that's irrelevant. What everything else going on there is not kosher. But you know, there's a line that has to be drawn somewhere. And generally, Hashkachas are not particularly excited to start, as they say, measuring everyone's tzitzis, you know, and saying, is this exactly a from enough place? And is this exactly, you know what, if it's not a from enough environment for you, don't go. You know, that generally Ashkachas shy away from that kind of thing. But it is at least off-putting to me that from owned places, and it's one thing, you have a restaurant in the city that caters to a broad clientele, but I don't know why, like in the Five Towns, Teaneck, Borough Park, you know, like I don't know why any such places would need to have, you know, to have a Halloween or a Valentine's Day display or deal. I think that's strange, at least.
It's not after a book, so I have to.
No, but maybe we should talk to them and you know, make a request that they not do that.
Yeah. I was in a store today, actually. They didn't have any heart-shaped displays, but while I was in there, somebody came in and asked them, so they said, oh, we have a few in the back, but they didn't display any of
them. Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah. Okay, so I guess there is some clientele here in the neighborhood. So even in Kew Garden Hills, there's still people, still non-Jews that are buying. I'm assuming there's non-Jews.
No, I know someone who made heart-shaped challah in honor of Valentine's Day.
Heart-shaped challah in honor of Valentine's Day. That seems...
Yeah.
So
nice.
Unusual.
Next question.
What? Let's maybe take 5 minutes to do one of the other ones. Which one?
What was the other one?
There was Tom Brady and there was $1,000 sandwich. Okay, here's why I thought the question was so unusual. It's true. The Rambam minyan mitzvah lo sasei kuf tzadi hei shelo lechol v'lishlos derech zolo v'sovei shnemer b'neinu zeh, based on Ben Sora Mora, you're not allowed to eat derech zolo v'sovei. The Gemara in Sanhedrin defines derech zolo v'sovei. Tartimar basar, right? Chatzi lugyayin. That he eats a certain quantity and drinks a certain quantity, you know, on the derech, you know, not even sitting like a mensch. And if you look in Poskim where they describe Zolo the Sove, you'll find such descriptions of being ochel baderech, right, to being ochel while you're walking, and bashuk, I should say, that passels you le'edus, because you have no self-dignity when you walk. So let me ask you, go into the Dunkin' Donuts drive-through and you get a coffee roll and a coffee, and you walk around, and as you're traveling, you're eating, you don't say a bracha on that either. And that is Zolo v'sovei. So two things. First of all, this is not Zolo v'sovei. Eating very expensive food or very high quality food is not Zolo Vesove. I have not found a single Maramakum that suggests that that's called Zolo Vesove. To the contrary, while we discourage a person getting in the habit of making demands for such foods or getting in the habit of wanting such foods, the Gemara says very clearly, and I believe in the Tzedakah Sugis in Ksuvus around Samach Beis or so, the Gemara says very, very clearly that a person who is in the habit of eating such foods can die from not having such foods, and it's a very bad idea to try to, you know, develop such expensive habits. But we never find that there is an iser to eat something very expensive. So I don't think that's called Zolo Vesove Bichla. So A, it's not Zolo Vesove. I think the definition is off. It's not Zolo Vesove. Second of all, even if it was, I guess B, if there was an A. So B, even if it were Zolo Vesove, I don't find anywhere that it says that you don't say a bracha on Zolo Vesove. There is a halacha that you don't say a bracha on machalos asuros. They don't say bracha on things that are aser. It's a fascinating machlokas. Rambam Ravid, in the first paragraph of Hilchos Brachos Halacha Yutes, the Rambam writes, you know, it's based on the Gemara Sanhedrin Vavam Beis. The Gemara, it's really based on the Mishnah and Brachos and Daf Mem Hey. The Mishnah says that Shlosh Shach Lukachas Chayevon Lazamein. Achal demai, my solution to the shmosa, my shein vegetishniftu, sham shachal zayis, kuti mizamlov, achal tevel, if you eat tevel, my solution shaloniftu shmosa, my shein vegetishniftu, all these things are also to eat. Ein mizamnin alav, the Mishnah tells us. So says the Rambam. Kala ochel dover asr, bein bezadon, bein bishkaga, einu mevarichalav, lobitchil, lobasov. If you eat something that's usr, whether you eat a b'shogeg or b'mezid, no bracha, lo b'chil v'lo b'sof. It's partially based on Sanhedrin Davav and Babakamet of Sadi Dalid, where Reb Lazar Omer, Haresha Gazal Saw Shal Chitim V'tachna V'afah V'ibrish Menachala. If you steal a saw of chitim and you grind it up and you bake it and you mafresh chala, Ketzad Mevarech, Heinzad Mevarech, Chalamanayit. You can't say a bracha on such a thing. It's a mockery of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, but say a berich niyitz Hashem. So that's what the Rambam writes. No bracha on machal suras. The Ravid writes, ta'a b'zeh ta'us gedola. The Rambam is making a huge mistake over here. Shalom rushein v'varchan el shein mezamnin aleim. Lom rushein lem chashivus kvius. Not that you don't say bracha. You don't do zimun on it, because it can't be called that you're koveya. That's what it is. But of course you would say a bracha, says the Ravid. We pass like the Rambam. Shulchan Aruch pass like the Rambam. You don't say bracha machal suras. Fine, macholos asuros, but we never find that you don't say a bracha when you're eating kiderech zolo v'sove, when we don't like your eating habits. You know, we don't say that if you go and you order the ribs, you know, as opposed to something that you can cut with a fork and a knife nicely, or you order the wings, you know, like man food, right? We don't say that you don't say a bracha because you're eating like an animal. You know, we don't say that. Okay, it may not be when you're meeting your future wife's parents, that may not be what you want to order, right? But that doesn't mean that you don't say a bracha. I found that very strange. But it should be noted that it is very important not to develop these very expensive tastes. And it doesn't come from a good place. It's not a good midah. Rav Moshe has, and we're running out of time, but Rav Moshe has a tshuva in Yardeich El Gimel Siman Ayin Aleph, where he talks about, he says, B'medinasenu meirov habracha shenasun Hashem Yisparach, yesh ratzon v'tayv gedol le'enos olam hazeh. In America, we have all these, all the brachos, so we have so much taiva. Bekola tanugim, shekorin lazeh. You know what they call this in America? Rav Moshe said, I never heard this before. You know what they call it in America? Good time. That people are interested in having a good time. Shagamzeh dover makalkal asad ma'od. This ruins a person. Shemargilis Yisrael la tayvos lisavos l'dvarim shein tzaruch behem. It gets him in the habit of wanting things that he doesn't need. Umashchis es midosav, and it destroys his midos. Ad shenepach l'chaya ra'a. Rav Moshe was an edela type of a person. You know, Rav Menashe Klein has a couple of tshuvas where he talks much stronger. Okay, but you know, like you sort of expect, Rav Menashe Klein is that kind of personality, where he talks much, much stronger. And if you want to look it up, it's very entertaining. Chelik Yud Gimel Siman Kuf Ayin Ches in Mishana Alachos, and Chelik Tezvav Siman Samach Beis. And you look at how Rav Menashe Klein talks about this. But Rav Moshe it's not a good thing to develop expensive habits. It's not a good thing also, and I mentioned this on the radio show, and we'll close with this, it's not a good reflection of the community that the restaurant saw this and said, this is something that's going to appeal to the community. Because what does that say about where we place gashmias? If they realize that, yeah, well, the value of gashmias, if they said this is going to be what appeals to the current Orthodox community in the New York area, that $1,000, that's what will appeal to them. It happens to be to Klal Yisrael's great credit, to many people it didn't appeal, and many people are disgusted. One guy came over to me, he heard the radio show, and he said that he had reservations at that restaurant, and when he was there after seeing this, he felt so uncomfortable being there. He felt like it was because it was such a value statement. And he said, you know what? They could have made it so easy. They could have gotten all this publicity and had no one criticize them. You know what they could have done? And maybe for next year they'll do this. They could have made this fancy $1,000 sandwich and just announced in advance, for everyone that we sell, 80% of the profits go to tzedakah. Done. Who's going to criticize now? Right. So okay, some people still criticize Zol Vesove and the and still that what are they appealing to? But they probably could have solved a lot of problems that way. But anyway, I don't think they think it was a failure. I think they think it was a success anyway. Because look, we're still talking about it. But we should be careful not to develop such incredibly high level titles, and we should try to be mistopic. But more, we don't have to be Rav Steinemann. But we should at least be normal people. Okay, have a wonderful Shabbos, everyone.